Welcome to Aha with Alistair podcast. I'm Alistair Willis, music director of the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. We've come to the final Jack M. Champagne Masterworks of our 90th anniversary season, for which we'll be performing music by two romantic masters, Rachmaninoff and Tchaikovsky. They both wore their hearts on their sleeves in their music. Their music epitomizes the Romantic era's sentiment. They were both 36 years old when they composed the pieces we're going to hear, and both pieces received bad press at their premieres, yet have gone on to become absolute staples of the repertoire. Let's start with Rachmaninoff, whose 150th anniversary we're all celebrating this year. We're going to play his third piano concerto, which you may recall was featured in Shine, the 1996 movie about the life of pianist David Helfgott. I had a chance to sit down with our soloist, the extraordinary Päivi Ekroth, to talk about why it's Rachmaninoff's most famous and most technically demanding concerto.
Rachmaninoff's third concerto is famous for being one of the hardest concertos ever written, and people often ask, well, what is it really that makes it so difficult? Rachmaninoff was a remarkable pianist, and he knew how to fully take advantage of everything that piano has to offer to the maximum. He had huge hands, and he naturally composed to suit his own pianism and his hands, which creates some additional difficulties for most pianists with smaller hands, and makes some passages much more acrobatic. And one has to get a little creative about how to be able to play them and how to make them work. Apart from the technical demands, this piece covers such a wide range of expression that it really encompasses the whole emotional human experience of life. Rachmaninoff takes us from profound sorrows and the deep darkness of despair to exhilarating heights of joy. And for the performer, allowing yourself to be vulnerable enough to be able to convey all of the emotional expression together with the technical demands and the stamina this piece requires, all of this combined is the extraordinary challenge of this piece.
Rachmaninoff composed four piano concertos, as well as the Rhapsody on a Theme by Paganini, which is essentially a fifth concerto. We all have a favorite, don't we?
Rachmaninoff's third concerto is a very special piece to me. It is one of my most favorite, if not the most favorite concerto in the whole wide world. But it also bears a special meaning to me, in the sense that it was instrumental in bringing me to the United States. I'm originally from Finland, and I heard Alexander Taradze play this concerto in Finland, and his performance of this piece made such an impression on me with its emotional power and honesty that it sparked my interest to come and study with him here in South Bend at IUSB. And so I did, and I packed my life into two suitcases and moved to South Bend, Indiana, almost 27 years ago now. And I did study this piece with Taradze, and now, of course, I'm very much looking forward to performing it with the South Bend Symphony.
And we are so looking forward to accompanying Päivi on it. I also knew the late Alexander Taradze. His contribution to South Bend over his 27 years here with IUSB was immense. I had the honor of accompanying him once. It was an electrifying experience. I know and have worked with several of his students who are amazing artists. Some, like Päivi, have remained in South Bend, ensuring his legacy lives on. I asked Päivi if she had a favorite moment in the third concerto.
I don't really have a favorite passage or even a favorite movement in this concerto, because I just love everything about it. And also all the movements are very different. It just contains so much. It's amazing how Rachmaninoff starts the first movement with such a simple little melody and builds the whole movement from there on, and culminating in a really elaborate cadenza, virtuosi cadenza. And after that, again, returns back to the simple melody at the end of the movement.
Let's hear that simple melody. Here's the very beginning.
The first movement contains a lot of drama and almost like a very unshakable sadness. To me, this movement portrays perhaps like a human life cycle where our life starts from nothingness and ends inevitably in nothingness, almost like an ashes to ashes kind of concept. The second movement starts off with a gorgeous melody, which is quite a long orchestra intro. And then after that, the piano part really takes over and dominates pretty much the whole movement, which is quite unusual. It's almost like a continuous cadenza with variations of a beautiful melody. And this movement contains just enormous amount of warmth, love, and passion, and a huge, almost ecstatic culmination for which the orchestra joins the piano. It's just a very uplifting experience.
Pivey touched on it earlier and rather underplayed the immense challenge to stamina and endurance that this concerto demands. This piece is an Everest for pianists. It takes a colossal effort. The pianist essentially plays non-stop for 40 minutes, with the beginning of the second movement being the only time for the pianist to rest. It's such a gorgeous moment for the orchestra. Let's hear a little of this orchestral magic.
The third movement is a thrilling chase with a fun middle section in E-flat major, which I particularly enjoy. And in my opinion, it's just incredible musical expression of childlike joy that just cannot be contained. I literally visualize skipping and jumping for joy in the way Rachmaninoff express it musically. Thank you. And the third movement ends in a big, kind of like larger than life theme where the orchestra joins the piano. And it's one of those great feel-good themes that, you know, feels like it unites all humankind and makes you feel that all is well in the world. And the movement ends in the famous Rachmaninoff signature. He literally signs his name rhythmically at the end of the movement. So these are perhaps the things that I enjoy most about this great concerto, which is truly a masterpiece. And this was Rachmaninoff's most favorite of his piano concertos, and he enjoyed playing this particular concerto most. And I can totally agree with him.
Let's hear this larger-than-life, feel-good ending and his musical signature at the very end. Extraordinary romantic music. And did you hear the signature at the end? Da-da-da-dum, Rachmaninoff. To me, Rachmaninoff sees the soloist as not merely someone who can sing soulfully and thunder imposingly, but as a flexible, responsive artist who knows how to blend, accompany, and listen. These are qualities that absolutely defined our amazing Päivi Ekroth, who we are so lucky to have in the community. In Päivi, the South Bend Symphony Orchestra has the perfect collaborator for this concerto. We can't wait to perform it together. Our second half will feature Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 4. As he began composing it, two things happened in his life that had a big influence on this masterpiece. The first thing was he encountered a wealthy patron who was to change his life. Her name was Nadezhda von Meck. She was obsessed with Tchaikovsky's music and for 13 years deposited 500 rubles a month into his account so he could focus on his craft. This patronage had the most unusual twist. By von Meck's decree, they were never to meet. They corresponded by letters, in which Tchaikovsky often referred to Symphony No. 4 as our symphony, and sometimes as your symphony, and ended up dedicating it to her. The second thing was that he got married, on the spur of the moment too, and no one is completely sure why. Was it because of his anxiety regarding his sexual orientation? Was it because he wanted to please his father, for whom marriage was the principal goal of a man's life? Was it because the bride, a former pupil of Tchaikovsky's, was infatuated with him and threatened to kill herself if he didn't marry her? The marriage lasted only 3 months and caused Tchaikovsky serious health issues, including a nervous breakdown. And during these 3 months, the completion of his fourth symphony was on hold. Once it was completed, Nadezhda von Meck implored Tchaikovsky to tell her what it was about. And he wrote, "The introduction is the seed of the whole symphony, undoubtedly the central theme. This is fate."
Thank you.
Tchaikovsky continues in his letter, this is fate, that fateful force which prevents the impulse towards happiness from entirely achieving its goal, forever on jealous guard, lest peace and well-being should ever be attained in complete and unclouded form, hanging above us like the sword of Damocles, constantly and unremittingly poisoning the soul. Its force is invisible and can never be overcome. Our only choice is to surrender to it and languish fruitlessly. That's quite the description, and most likely connected to the emotional roller coaster he'd been on in the preceding months. Yet Tchaikovsky later wrote in a letter to his friend Sergei Taneyev that, yes, his symphony was programmatic, but that it would be impossible to give the program in words. He wrote, "Ought not music express the things for which words cannot be found, but which nevertheless arise in the heart and cry out for expression?" In this letter, Tchaikovsky mentioned he was influenced by another famous symphony that deals with fate. Beethoven, as we know, unifies his Fifth Symphony with this motive, which inspired Tchaikovsky to do the same with his opening brass motif. Also, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony starts in C minor and ends in C major, a journey of darkness to light, with countless reiterations of C major chords giving us the feeling of celebration and that answers have been found. Tchaikovsky starts in F minor and ends in F major, yet his ending is more of a frenzy, which always leaves me feeling that we're not finished, that fate, this invisible force, his foes, his struggles, have not been overcome. And we know they weren't, as he went on to personalize fate in his Fifth Symphony and ultimately personalize his own demise in the Sixth Symphony. In the Fourth, there are four movements. The first is the longest, the heaviest, the darkest. To me, the mood alternates between hard reality and dreams of happiness. At the end, we are spent. We've searched. We have not found answers. Questions remain throughout the second movement, which is full of grief and melancholy. And what better instrument to express these than the oboe, though, of course, oboes can sound happy as well. What's extraordinary about the melody is its rhythmic monotony. No change of rhythm for about a minute. Of this movement, Tchaikovsky wrote, "You feel nostalgic for the past, yet no compulsion to start life over again. Life has wearied you." With the third movement, finally the mood lifts. There is happiness. It begins with the strings using their fingers, not their bows, which I always thought sounded like a huge Russian stringed instrument called a balalaika. Tchaikovsky wrote that this is music that is heard after one has begun to drink a little wine and is beginning to experience the first phase of intoxication. Tchaikovsky knew this condition very well. Did I mention he had a very serious drinking problem? And if you're not ready for it, the fourth movement can catch you off guard. A full blaze of orchestral colour and energy. Tchaikovsky goes on to quote a Russian folk song called The Little Birch Tree. This movement has a rather carnival, upbeat atmosphere, yet there, to crash the party, the fate motto returns in full force. And, as I mentioned, the symphony concludes with a barely controlled frenzy, and with more questions than answers. This symphony is so loved today that it's astonishing that the premiere was not well received. A reviewer for the New York Post wrote, "The fourth Tchaikovsky symphony proved to be one of the most thoroughly Russian, i.e. semi-barbaric, compositions ever heard in the city. If Tchaikovsky had called his symphony A Sleigh Ride Through Siberia, no one would have found this title inappropriate." On a personal note, this symphony has very special meaning to me, as it was the first major piece I ever conducted. I'd had very little experience when my first conducting teacher, Adrian Brown, called me to see if I could cover a rehearsal for him with the Harrow Youth Orchestra in North London. I made the wise decision to attend a rehearsal 2 weeks before I was due to conduct, and I was blown away by the orchestra, by far the best youth orchestra I'd ever heard. And I also realized I did not know Tchaikovsky's Fourth at all. So for the next 2 weeks, I poured every waking moment into learning it. It was total immersion. I'm not sure I slept much or ate much, but I remember loving every moment. The big day arrived. It went really well. I had a great time. The orchestra was responsive and appreciative. I got in my car to drive home, and I burst into tears. I absolutely lost it. It had hit me so suddenly, a realization that I'd not prepared myself for, that I had no idea if or when I would ever conduct Tchaikovsky's Fourth again. I can't tell you how empty that made me feel after having felt so full. It was perhaps 8 years later that I next conducted it, and I've gone on to conduct it many times. So in hindsight, it turned out to be a good lesson to enjoy the moment yet see the bigger picture of life. These pieces of music are like friends, and as musicians, we have to learn quickly to move on after a performance and patiently await the next time we get to visit. The next visit is here. Perhaps it's fate. Thanks for listening to Aha with Alistair.